Welcome to QTPOC Talks, your podcast for queer and trans art, media, and collective healing.
Hello, y'all. Welcome to QTPOC Talks, your podcast for queer and trans art, media, and collective healing. Our mission is to bridge the gap between media and QTPOC artists. For today's spotlight, I'm super... Oh my god. It's okay, I can edit this out on my own. For today's spotlight, I'm super excited to bring in Coyote Park from Tongva Territory in Los Angeles, California. Coyote describes themselves as a shapeshifter from the Pacific diaspora, a two-spirit mixed person, telling stories through photo, film, performance, writing, and the body. Coyote, how are you doing?
Are you queer? I'm good. I just got back to Tongva Territory after staying quarantined with queer family, but I'm really excited to be back and to be talking with you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here and on the podcast. I've been following your journey on Instagram for a while now. And it's just super exciting to, have you on the podcast and to hear more about how you got to where you are and to help really uplift other artists out there who might be feeling, stuck or might not be feeling included in, this creative process that the world is going through. And I love how you come in and you proudly take up space, you proudly tell people who you are, and it's beautiful to see it and to be a part of, just your community that you're building.
Thank you. That means a lot to hear.
Yeah, thank you for the work that you do. So, yeah, tell us some more about your work. What got you into your work? And what kind of work do you mostly like to work towards, or what type of work is like your favorite medium?
Yeah, well, I feel like I was always like a really imaginative and manic kid. And I'm an Aquarius, and most of my placements are in air and water. I have no earth in my entire chart. Oh my so God. I feel like it's always been up in the clouds for me, which has been really fun. But I think that I've always needed different outlets to, find ways to not cope with that, but to exist with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always, really was into performance as a kid, and then it kind of became bringing performance into photography. And I feel like whenever I talk about myself as an artist, I always just say that I'm a storyteller because of everything that I've been playing around with. And really, at the end of the day, it's all just play. But I identify the most with being an image maker, thinking about the photos that I've created of my loved ones and of a lot of self-portraits of myself during quarantine. And I'm really thankful to be doing this work in the end of the day. It's always been life-saving for myself from my past experiences and where I'm at now. But that's just where I'm at, and I really am thankful to be creating more work with my, lovers and with my wife. In the end of the day, those are the people that make this all really worth it and super meaningful to me.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I think it's super important to have work that brings us, meaning, that helps us to feel connected, that helps us to feel free, that doesn't drain us, that really helps us to be in our bodies, and to I love that. That's probably what's grounding you, You say you have no earth in your chart, and like you said, this work helps you to kind of connect to that heart center, that that grounding energy that you need. So I think that's really cool to see like how you found that balance through your work.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, what is like the, are there any challenges that you go through sometimes when you're creating work with lovers? I know that for me personally, with like my trauma and things like that, it's really hard for me to sometimes find like trust when it comes to like work and creating with like people that I'm intimate with and things like that. So I wanted to know from you, are there any difficulties or any challenges or any things that you sometimes face when you're creating your work?
Oh, totally. Something that I've been thinking a lot about lately is, you know, art is memory, and with relationships that we have, art lives in the same way that memory does. Mm-hmm. And for like working with lovers and working with romantic partners, just understanding that relationships are always in flux. And when you create something so vulnerable with another person, you never know like your like future or past dynamics, and seeing and understanding that relationships aren't linear also. And I actually, I feel like with the work that I make with my wife, like we live together, we're always hopeful of like continue building and growing future with each other, whether that be our future selves or cultivating different like, you know, space or cultivating a home together. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always kind of having conversations with my wife about like, how do you like feel about these images that I made of you, like thinking about ways that I'm able to see her through the ways that she wants to be seen. And I really, a lot of image making to me is like capturing like energy and space. And I really, at the end of the day, want to capture the warmth of the people that I love, but capture them in their, like, fullness. So really questioning ways I can work on that. But when it comes to what I was saying about, like, memory, I've had, in past partnerships of mine, I've had other people photograph my ex and I all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like my wife is the first person I've really engaged in image making in this way, and besides like my sweetie too, which both of them I have like really like loving and soft ongoing relationships with. But I'm opening up to doing this series that I was going to post about this month, doing an open call to work with other like T for T couples, but like specifically trans like folks of color that are in partnerships to photograph, kind of moving outside of the work that I just do with my partner. And with that, like understanding that, you know, in the say a year from now, like who knows like which couples are still gonna be like seeing each other or have like fond memories of each other. You know, and so I'm trying to think through what that means to like open that dialogue in the beginning of the process of being like recognized that it's like kind of like a time capsule, like it's an image in that time of their relationship, and really being in dialogue if people don't feel like comfortable with those images anymore. You know, it's like questioning for us as artists, how do we like understand that these are like long lasting relationships we're building?
I love that. I really loved, you know, you talking about how relationships aren't linear and how you incorporate a lot of communication and listening into your work. Whereas like, you know, you ask your partner, like, how do you feel about this? You know, and instead of just kind of just putting it up there and doing like what you feel, you're really intentional about, you know, making sure that everyone feels safe in a way, you know, and I feel like that's something really important as a image maker. And I love that image maker instead of photographer, like, word. I feel like it's different, you know, because I don't know, photographers, at least that I've worked with, they're usually, you know, cis white men. And they're usually taking photos of, you know, people and not, they're just doing like horrible things with the photos or like not giving them. Like this has been so many different things that I've personally dealt with and other people that like do modeling, you know, with these types of photographers. So I really like how, you know, you have a different word for that too that I have yet to even use, you know, image maker. I really like that. It has like a different feel to it. I really like how, you know, there's like more personality in that, you know, like you're not just taking a photo, but you're creating an image, you're creating a space, you're connecting to, like you said, that time capsule. And the, I think that's really, really, that's cool. It's different, you know, and that just makes me like love your work even more. So thank you.
Oh. Well, what you're saying about other photographers, it really brings up the, you know, the really sad history of image making, of like these power dynamics and these hierarchies of like, this is the photographer and they're gonna, and this like, relationship of taking a photo, you know, I like to think about taking a photo with someone rather than taking, like, what does it mean to be in collaboration with the people you're sharing space with? And so for images that I make and create in collaboration with my wife, like they're images where she'll like direct it and I'll like, you know, click the shutter or she'll click the shutter and I'll be moving around in it. So, really sharing that like agency over the camera in that space.
I love that. And I love the work that you're doing coming up. So the open call work, with T for T couples, particularly, you know, POC, and how does it feel to like, I guess, divert from your own work into a space of, you know, bringing other people in? Are there, again, like any challenges that you think you might face, or do you feel that it'll be pretty smooth and easy flowing type of work?
I feel like I always started, with people outside myself, like with other people in community. I started off really working as like a nightlife photographer, and and so it's always like documenting other people and then sharing the image directly with them afterwards to be like, hey, like here, you and your cute outfit, like here's a photo of yourself, you know, for people to really find like pride and like a image of themselves. So I always thought of it as like gift giving to different people for events that I worked at. And then I ended up, like, I feel like I only really started making a lot of self-portraits in quarantine. It was a really tough time for me because my surgery kept getting postponed, where I had to really like, be present with my body and feel comfortable, and it was really one of the roughest mental health places I've been in. Right before quarantine, though, I feel like the first photos I was really placing myself in the images was I was doing this Tea for Tea bath series, where it was me taking baths with like either people that I like went on little dates with that I'm still really close with, or people that were like close friends of mine. We would like play music and like dance around. And I would be taking these baths with people where we would be like in the bathtub for hours and the water was like lukewarm and it was cold. And we were just talking and laughing the whole time, where I probably would take like only 5 minutes, or like not 5 minutes, like more like five images over like 30, like 20 minutes. It could be a really short period of time of actually making images with people. And then the rest of the time is more of just experiencing that space. But I really missed doing that type of collaborative work where I was just working with so many different people. And I do all these photos with my wife where we have us on the bed space. So thinking about sanctuary spaces, so like the bath series, like the bath as a sanctuary space and a space to decompress, I wanted to think about bed space as an altar. So I'm creating an image right now with my wife and I where the bed has all of the things we have on our shared altar in our living rooms, and kind of moving everything over to the bed with both of us on it. and then putting our favorite flowers everywhere, like putting like satin, different types of like, you know, creating the bed space as an altar with all of the items that are feel very protected to us. And I kind of wanted to use that as the first instance of this series and do an open call to make other altar T4T bed spaces images with people.
I love that. Wow. Because, yeah, I definitely resonate with, you know, I resonate a lot with just having a, like a, I feel like your altar needs to be organized in a way, you know, and like, just loved, really. I don't want to say it needs to be like tidy and well kept, but I've learned like over time, like certain spaces, like in my house, keeping them clean and tidy. And after that, I like naturally create an altar there, like in this bookshelf I have, like I cleaned it up a bit. And then like I naturally created like an altar up there with like different rocks and some candles. And then same thing in my bedroom, you know, I had, I have a little altar in there and it's kind of like out of sorts, you know, because I just got out of a relationship and, we were living together and, you know, we had a lot of, we went through a lot together. We went through so many different things and, you know, finding that, in loving myself, you know, I had to move forward in a different direction. And it was super hard and, you know, there's a lot that kind of went into it. And we were practicing polyamory and it was kind of like our first time doing that. And there was a lot of like jealousy that came up and certain different things too. And like it taught me though so much of like how I don't need to dump all of my love into just one reservoir, how I can spread love to multiple people and not have to feel like sneaky about it or not have to feel, you know, I guess like in a box if I did want to, you know, explore something with someone else. But then I did find like, again, a lot of challenges too in that and like, you know, seeing like my partner maybe with someone else or whatever. And so I guess I have a question for you in regards to, like, how do you navigate polyamory and finding love? And what things do you do to balance out, like, if you feel any jealousy or anything like that?
Yeah, it's interesting having this question now because I have been having, like, different discussions, like, with my primary partner, with my wife, about kind of going off of what I was talking about earlier, where relationships and disrupting like linearity and understanding that you both are two people that's like navigating like an always shifting world with shifting emotions. And I think that as I'm building future with my wife and building a safer and healthier environment for both of us, I think it's really pushed me to be in communication with her about like mental health and mental wellness. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for myself, having a history of like hospitalizations and having a history of just really having to work through emotional regulation for myself, being able to understand how where I can like move with more grace for myself. And I think that there's a way that people in general engage in relationships with a very sense of like projected permanence. Some people, like, this person's always going to be like this, or when people enter relationships and being like, is this a monogamous person or a non-monogamous person, is this person a night person or a day person, you know? And because of this, it, when we enter long-term relationships, it doesn't give us the type of kindness that you would, that sometimes, like, I don't know, we give to only ourselves. Like, you know, when in the end of the day, I can understand that, like, there are periods where I'm more depressive, where other times where I'm feeling more, like, energized. And I've been having conversations with my primary partner who I live with about what it means for times in our life where, say, I just am having a hard time with my body, or she's like having some type of like health, like, issues that she needs more support through, or, and I feel like that's the same with like mental wellness. And for myself, I have periods of time where I feel like my nervous system just feels so like hypersensitive, and what it to like take care of that core, feel very regrounded and settled, where I think that in the past where there are moments where I feel more of like where things feel heavier for me, or where my partner, in terms of talking about jealousy or attachment styles, or you know, really navigating newness with a partner, whether it's that person going on like a date or like a hookup or different things that you know, is different out of your regular routine of your partnership. I think there are moments where that rests like a lot heavier, or feel like it stings differently than other times. I feel like so chill. So I'm really trying to build that type of like grace with my partner of like, how do we work through periods of times where with my mental health, we're able to really check in and see what each other's needs are. And in that, it makes me feel like my partner is loving me for my fullness rather than me as like a love object of like, oh, this is my like non-monogamous partner and we're cool with these exact boundaries and this is how it will always be. Because understanding that there are different periods and times in our life where we both like need to approach each other and approach our relationship in different styles.
Wow, I love that. You really, I feel like you really do the work to know yourself. And I don't want to speak for you in that, but I just feel like you have a lot of self-awareness, and I think that's really admirable and something to look up to, you know. Being self-aware and having these conversations that are difficult, so that not only you feel safe, but also that your partners feel safe. And yeah, like not feeling like an object, but really feeling like two people or however many people, you know, in this relationship. And we come together and it's always shifting and changing, and, you know, boundaries are always shifting and changing as well, which is where, you know, communication is needed. And some boundaries don't change, you know, some things are fixed in a way, but, you know, it all depends on the person. And again, you know, going back to communication being the really the thing that we all need to practice more, you know, and I don't think there can be too much communication. I feel like, you know, if you're with someone and they're like, we talk too much about things, and maybe like that's not the right person for you, because, you know, if you have a lot of different things that you need to talk about to feel safe in your relationship, that's important. And it's important to find someone that wants to hear you out and be with you authentically, you know, for who you are. So I love that. I love hearing that from you.
I mean, my therapist is talking to me about how in relationships we really gravitate towards these like three very specific like types of relationships, where it's relationships out of fun, out of comfort, and out of growth. And sometimes it can be like a mix of those things or all of those things. And, you know, when it comes to relationships out of growth, like, really understanding that, you know, there's going to be hard conversations. And I think when you're having like casual dating or like casual hookups, I think it, the seriousness of the relationships out of growth are like those conversations that are, feel like, serious, or feel like they, you know, keep coming up. You're able to like, have that. I don't know if I'm making sense. I feel like what I'm trying to explain is, you know, in my partnership, this is definitely the longest partnership that my wife has been in. And for her, you know, this has been kind of like the most serious conversation she's had to have with someone. And I think we, when it comes to you saying earlier, that there's like, oh yeah, there's never like too many conversations. I think for some people that aren't like used to having those like intentional conversations about like, what does this feel like to you? Like, how can we move forward? Mm-hmm. I think that can still be really hard. And so, I think that right now I'm in a period where I'm understanding that monogamy and non-monogamy, like, that's not always so binary. I feel like that's such, mm-hmm. like, a queer thing to say of being like, yeah, like, not everything's binary. But it's really how do we grow with that when we're, like, just like learning, like love each other in different stages of our lives.
So you're saying that basically like the binary would be like, oh, if you can't have conversations with me, then maybe it doesn't work. Whereas we could change that and be like, well, if we can't have conversations, then maybe we need to find a different way to communicate our needs. Is that what you're?
Yeah.
Okay.
And understanding that, like, those, like, needs are always changing off of, like, our environment or, you know.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of, like, you know, just what does it mean to talk about, like, what are our, you know, like, you know, non-negotiables or what are, you know, things like that that feel more of, like, a stable foundation of, like, these are the things that we both are kind of, like, expecting or hoping for when it comes to partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are the non-negotiables in our, in like, building this relationship, and what things can we, like, find an even ground for? What things can we compromise? I love that. And again, I feel like that has added to, you know, the fuel to keep you in this relationship, I think, for so long. Again, is you having this self-awareness and being able to, and like, yes, it's hard, you know, it's not like, oh, this is like, yay, we just have conversations. Like, no, we're working with human beings. We're not working with computers where, like, it's a yes or no. There's like, there's different things, you know, there's different things that might come up. You might have woken up today and, like, maybe today you don't feel like having conversations about certain things, or maybe we had a planned house meeting or something and maybe this isn't the best time for you. And I think it goes back to, again, just being able to know your partner too. Like, maybe if your partner, if y'all can't have a conversation at the moment, then maybe it's like reading energy. Maybe it's, you know, like, you've been with this person for a while, so maybe you can tell that their energy is not on for you to have this conversation right now. And so maybe you
Oh, totally. Yeah. And really being able to have, like, moments of rest of, like, maybe we should talk about this, like, later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to live in a collective, like, a house collective, and it was different than other houses that I lived in. I lived in a group home when I was younger, because my parents were smoking crack and doing all the things that, you know, young Black kids deal with in New York, or really around the world too. But yeah, they were going through that, and I was in high school, and I was living somewhere where there wasn't any. It was very binary. It was like, you do this or you do that, and if you do that, you get out. If you do this, you stay in. And then, and it was very rigid. It was hard to stay in that relationship in a way. It was hard to stay in that housing. It was hard for me to change myself to make other people happy. Even though it affected my housing, I was still going out and smoking weed. I was still going out and living my life. You know, I was still doing these things, and they were like, you can't smoke weed, you can't do this. Because it was basically like a housing place for people that were also like in jail, that were out of jail because they went to court and they said they're going to do this program and get clean and sober. But I didn't consider myself an addict, and I still don't. But, you know, I didn't consider myself an addict. I was just like my parents do that. But again, like they were very non-negotiable about their standards. There was no space for people to be a human. It was kind of like, all right, all these people are damaged here and they have to follow this rubric to get back to wellness. And if they don't follow this, if they don't take these meds and meet with this person and do these things, then they're not adequate enough to be a part of this community, to be a part of society. And it's super triggering. And a lot of people that were in that program after they left, like a lot of the friends I had there, like are dead now. Like they went back to drugs. They went back to these things because they didn't have space, I feel like, to be themselves, to be authentic. And then so when I lived in this other space in Virginia called the Earth Folk Collective, it was ran by these white folks, but they were super open to conversation. They were super open to just you coming in authentically. If we have a house meeting coming up and you can't show up and you don't feel like talking, you are still valued. You are still loved. You are not shunned. You know, there was so much space for me to grow and for me to really like connect to my art, for me to do a lot of different things that I couldn't have done in the other space, you know. And I left that housing still having connections with them. I still have a key to the damn house, you know, like, and it's all there in Virginia, but it's just like, yeah, now that I think about it, like everything could be seen as like a relationship in a way. Like, what is my relationship to this housing collective? What's my relationship to that one? And in our relationship, what you're helping me see is that when we have space to be and show up authentically as ourselves, then we can grow, and we can love and we can create and we can do all the things that we kind of come here on earth to do.
Yeah, definitely.
I love that. We're always shifting. We're always changing. We're always, you know, building. And it's important to be able to be in a space where we can do that, where we can shift and grow and, you know, move our body and have these conversations. Yeah,
that's like the power of understanding shape-shifting too, is less than just like a physical thing, but also is like an energetic thing and an environmental and emotional aspect of life. And I think about that a lot outside of just like my physical body, gender expression, presentation, but also just like the way I work with others, the way that I like navigate things with my partners and friendships.
Yeah, like how do we, you know, keep that flow going, navigating all these different routes and feelings and emotions. And yeah, there's not one path, huh? There's just so many different ways.
Yeah,
we're just figuring it out. So I wanted to know some more about your work in Hawaii. What's going on over there? You were over there for a bit doing some work over there. You had like a showcase.
Yeah, that was the Alchemist Bloodkin. It's like a body of work that I've been cultivating for the past few years now. I grew up in Oahu, and I lived in 13 different homes. So I grew up in Honolulu, in Liliha, in Mililani, and so my dad and my grandma both grew up in Oahu as well, and I have family on Maui, and it's just where the Korean side of my family immigrated to.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing the show for Alchemist Bloodkin in Oahu because a big goal of mine was I really have this huge need to bring it back to the community in the Kingdom of Hawaii that raised me and the other trans youth there, because it, like, just island life can get really, like, lonely and isolating, and there's just such a beautiful and vast and strong and inspiring, like, trans and queer community of color in Hawaii. A lot of, like, indigenous, mahu, folks that are my extended family out there. And so, it was just something where I really wanted to bring it as, like, a gift back to the people that always, you know, made me feel, like, so nurtured in so many points in my life. Mm-hmm. I had my first, T4T partner who I went to prom with, who, like, flew out from Maui to Oahu for the show, and I had, like, one of my first, like, high school dating girlfriends, like, we were, like, kind of casual dating. She came through, and then I had just, like, someone who's kind of, like, my trans auntie. She's too young to be my auntie, but she's, like, kind of just, like, a very, like, real figure in my life. But she flew out from Kauai for this show as well, so it felt like so, and she came too, my wife came to Hawaii for the show. I went a little early and helped install it, and it was at Opami Space in Kakaako, but yeah, I feel like this year has been the most I've been able to go home and return to the Kingdom of Hawaii, my hometown, and I went to Maui for a little bit to see the same, like, old T4T partner who is now really, really, I feel like they're, like, my sibling now, but I went to go see them, and that's where my Nana and my Papa are buried, so I spent some quality time there, and also got to go to Oahu twice in 2021. So it's just, yeah, it's just really nice to bring back the kind of where it all started for me.
Oh, I love that. And living where you live, it's closer to your homeland, right?
Yeah. So being in LA now, my reservation's in Northern California. There's also a lot of other Yurok people where I live now. I'm also just close to the Pacific Ocean. I feel like having family from Korea and having family from Northern California, I feel very, like, held where I'm at now.
I love that you have found, like, a place to be that feels good and that is, you know, affordable and that is also, you know, feels connected and grounding for you, as we were talking about your chart earlier. And so I wanted to ask you, what are some ways that folks can find your work, and how can folks support you?
Yeah, people can find, I feel like I always post so much of daily updates or ways to be involved or ways to support past projects I've done, because there's the Cutie BIPOC anthology Behind Shut Eyes that still has the second edition for sale, and I'm currently trying to work on another book project with Gender Fails, so people can find that through my link tree on Instagram, which is just Coyote Park. My website is also just my name as well, coyotepark.format.com. There you can kind of see more portfolios of different series I've been working on. And yeah, I have a lot of links in my Instagram bio that people can kind of follow. I also My wife and I's big project we're working on is a film this year, so I'm gonna be announcing more of that this upcoming, like, end January, February time frame. So just be on the lookout for all the different collaborations and creations that are on the way.
Aww. Fuck yeah. I can't wait to see. I'm excited to see that. I believe my friend was actually a part of that, Alice. I'm not sure.
Oh, that we did.
That was what?
That was the past film that we did.
Oh, so there's another one. Okay, y'all are on the move.
Now, this film that we're working on is being made in the summer, and it's a two-spirit road trip film, like a love story film. Did was last summer, and that wasn't my work, but that was T's, and I just helped out on set, but that was for her film since she's a filmmaker.
I'm really excited for that film because I love road trips and I love love stories. I am a big goofball for all the rom-coms and love and love things. Probably part of my hopeless romanticism, but yeah, I just want to thank you again so much for being a part of the podcast and, you know, sharing yourself, and I really look forward to seeing and hearing more from you soon.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. And thank you all for tuning in and for listening to this edition of QT Poc Talk. We'll see you later.
See you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of QT Poc Talks. Our podcast would really be nothing without you, and I just want to thank you again for being a part of this beautiful community. If you'd like to support our podcast and our mission, please visit adventureswithowl.com/QTPocTalks. That's adventureswithowl.com/QTPocTalks. Thank you so much.